If you're hearing this, you're listening via the free feed. This is an episode about the Mark Wahlberg, Antoine Fuqua movie, Infinite. Not very good, but, you know, still fun episode. We have there's a special J-Pod guest starring episode of In the Heights that's at the Patreon right now. You can go check that out. And tonight, literally tonight, we're going to tape a episode of F9, the Fast Saga. With me, JBL, and Kristen Soltis Anderson, special guest. So, you know, if you sign up for the Patreon, you'll get that now, or you can get it in a couple weeks if you just want to wait. You don't want to support the show, whatever, no big deal. So sign up for the Patreon, check it out, you can jump in the comments, lots of great community there. Enjoy this week's episode about F9 with KSA, fan of the show, big time, you know, pundit. Slumming it with us to talk about Fast and Furious movies. Maybe she'll convince me that they're good. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, we'll see you over there.
This isn't your first life, Bevan. You are an infinite. You've lived and died. 1,000 times.
You're talking about reincarnation.
If you can remember who you were, you will understand who you can become.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Last and Sonny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, you're in a very illuminated room with a different perspective. I see more of the house, and that you're not wearing a tank top. You're wearing a t-shirt. What is happening?
True. Shannon took the kids down to the beach this morning.
Oh, nice.
I have the run of the house, and so I am down in my office. I have an office. It's also a bedroom. So it's an office / G Money's. Yes. Oh, gosh, you're going to have to bleep that, Sonny. Sorry. Office / G Money's bedroom.
You just said it again.
G Money. Okay. G Money is okay. And so I can do whatever I want.
Frankly, I'm surprised you're even clothed.
Which is amazing. And so of the things I have done so far, I am closing in on inbox zero before I sleep tonight.
Oh,
my email
good.
Inbox will be at zero.
So you're just hitting mark all as red on Gmail?
No. I went on 2 Peloton workouts today. 2 of them. 2 days.
Well, wait a minute. Aren't you supposed to give your body a rest? How can you do 2? Or what are you doing?
I'm going to save the deets of that, as you once said. The deets. Do you remember that? Do you remember that episode? I'm going to save the deets for outtakes because I have some Peloton stories.
Oh, my gosh.
For you boys. And what I would like to spend my time talking about is the whale stuff.
Oh,
but
yeah.
We could do that after you guys tell me how you are. Victorino, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm a little tired. We had a little flooding situation when 2 nights ago when that torrential rainstorm. I know you get them a lot down in Texas, Sonny, but it was one of these horrendous, you know, like gaining whatever it is, an inch, 2 inches, an hour, hail the size of golf balls out in Fairfax, that kind of a thing. So Kate went to check in the basement, as she always does. And whereas usually I'm like, I'm sure it's fine. And she goes in and it was getting a little wet. And then I tried to
in the basement.
In the basement on the unfinished
Sorry.
Part. And the unfinished part of the basement and where I normally don't like to tread anyway. And I then try to just, you know, move things around and realize that it's just, you know, it's not going to soak everything up because it's just, you could see where it's coming in through the door. And so then I told Kate we need to get the shop vac for this action, and she disagreed. But I said, "What are you going to do? You can't sponge it all, you know." So we got the shop vac out, and I must have emptied it about 10 times into the sink.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
It filled up. Yeah. And it's heavy because you got to lift that gigantic thing full of water, storm water, into the drain, you know, in the unfinished
which is
part.
Much heavier than regular water.
Oh, yes.
Storm water is like
debris,
the density level on that is through
it's
the roof.
Thick,
but
it's murky. And I said, look.
Victorino?
Yes, JV.
Are you sure it was storm water and not heavy water for the
heavy
mass
water.
Device?
Yes, for the mass device. That stuff is very heavy. I had to travel all the way to the bottom, and I had to fight giant
eels.
Sorry. I just broke the sound with that one. Anyway, I said, you know, it's probably coming in like through the side of the garage, and I can just open the garage door and then mop out the garage to, you know, change the course of the stream wherever it's coming in. No, the answer is the entire garage was ankle deep in water.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of
water.
Has
this happened to you before?
Not to this extent. This was nuts. This was really nuts.
Sounds like a grade problem, maybe?
I it was weird. And, you know, we used to have, where I am recording right now, in the finished part of the basement, we used to have all sorts of problems, and no longer. My theory, I mean, there's all sorts of, we made all sorts of fixes to the house, but my other overarching theory is the house shifts, the house moves, and things happen. And suddenly, water's coming in on the other side. That's my theory. Anyway, around 1 a.m., it finally stopped and subsided.
It's like the Hollow Earth in Godzilla versus King Kong.
Yes.
Over time, the gravity well at the house
has shifted. Yes.
180 degrees.
You, house is moving, man. The house is moving.
Your house just like stands up and moves an inch
it
to the
does.
Left. Every,
no, we don't notice it.
Every
house,
day.
Houses move, man. Houses,
just to mess with you.
Houses move a little bit. So I had that. And on top of that, because now that the pandemic is over, I was out and about, had a couple beers, and then I had a gout flare up. And It was the full deal. I can't believe it. And so I had to drink a lot of water.
Heel or toe?
Oh, always. Okay, that's a good question. I was going to say, it's not true. It's not always the same place. This was the toe, the same toe as usual. It was sore. At first, I'm like, gee, why do I feel so sore? And then sure enough, then it gets red. And then I'm drinking a lot of water. In fact, I'm drinking a lot of water now. So I'll probably have to relieve myself every 5 or 10 minutes, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I'm just kidding. I have a motorman's friend. That happened. So my advice to my fellow gout sufferer listeners is, again, lay off the beer, stick to gin. That's what I did the next night. It really did. I had to drink something. I was at a party. At a gin and tonic.
Yes, you had to drink something at the party.
Yes.
It would have been weird to have water.
You have to. No, you can't do that. That's very rude. Sonny, rude. Yes, Sonny.
Yes.
Yeah, right?
I didn't realize you were asking me a question. No. It sounded like a command. It was like, Sonny. Rude.
Right. Wouldn't you say you have to have a cocktail?
Rude.
You have to
Next
have a cocktail.
Question.
No, like, I can't.
All right, John McLaughlin, calm down.
Wait, all the times I've come to parties where you guys have been and I've just had like tonic water or water or a Diet Coke.
It was rude.
You guys have been judging me as being rude?
Yes.
Yeah. That's rude.
So that's what is happening in my. But now it is subsiding enough so
it's
that
less,
I ran.
It's less the parties than the lunches. The lunches.
Yeah, no,
where
if we're all drinking,
where
it,
we're
you
like,
can't have
where
a Diet
at,
Coke.
Where we're at the Palm and we're funneling beers, you know, like beer bongs.
Three martini. Three martinis.
He's pouring them down there. He's like,
four martinis.
Who wanted the pitcher of Manhattans? Like me, you know? And then you're sitting there with your iced tea. That's when we're judging you.
Mm.
I have literally never had a drink at lunch on a school day when we've been out to.
It's
out to
it's,
lunch.
It's probably sad.
And
it's
I probably. Just thought I was being the responsible one.
No.
And it turns out you were judging me as being
responsible.
The one.
Right? That's irresponsible for you as a writer.
Yeah, I mean, that's just
as a
not,
journalist.
That's not how journalists operate, man. Please.
You know what they say about the martinis, right?
No.
They're like ladies' breasts. One is too few and three is too many. But, you know, my addendum to that is, of course, three is just right if you live in the Total Recall Mars.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you seen Total Recall?
Christopher Hitchens. That's clearly where I live. Okay.
You
Sonny,
know,
what,
I think
yes,
it's possible that I've never had a martini.
I think that's very possible, too.
You wouldn't
and
like
sadly,
them.
No, too strong. Too strong.
You would not.
Strong,
I mean,
not
it's
sweet
just,
enough.
It's just gin and... It's just gin and vermouth.
It's alcohol plus alcohol plus alcohol. There's bitters is alcohol too. It's just all
Sounds
alcohol.
Gross.
It's delicious.
Do you want a drink that's just 50% alcohol? Because that's a drink that's just by ABV.
No, I am
just
drinking right now.
Is that
some Hardywood?
Is that a peach shuffer huffer?
A peach triple. So it is a Belgian triple ale that is, you know, got some peaches.
And they put
fruit
in
there. Those
people
at Hardywood, they are all right. I love me some Hardywood.
I bet you do. Sonny, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. One of my kids has two camps this week, one right after the other. There's like a day camp where she goes to the Spanish World School. It's, you know, Spanish immersion. She's not learning any Spanish. I was like, what Spanish did you learn today?
Is it all critical race theory?
We're not learning words, Dad. We're doing things, and they speak in English too. Like, okay, fine. Well, what's the point then? Why are we sending you to this? And then she also has a Girl Scouts camp that is like, it's a Twilight camp. I'm putting Twilight in quotes here. So,
oh, like the theme, like the
not like the book,
the vampire books,
not like the book. Just like that's the time. So the camp runs from like 5:30 to 9:30. So
at
basically
night?
either Beth or I have to spend like 4 hours in Plano, which is where this is.
Oh, I know
which is
Plano.
Like,
I've been to Plano.
It's like 40 minutes from our house.
It's
so
the home
it's
of
like
Frito-Lay.
It's long enough that it's annoying to come back.
But again,
for
to answer Jonathan's question, night?
Yeah,
how much
night,
are
like
they paying you
5:30 to 9:30
to schlep your kid back and forth to this?
9:30 is late.
It's fine. It's the thing about it is it's actually kind of nice because then you get like, you know, 3 or 4 hours, you know, to yourself, kind of
like dinner.
But then we just end up spending all the time like running errands and stuff anyway. And like on tomorrow. So tomorrow is my day and I'm going to have to go see The Hitman's Bodyguard 2. So I have something to write about this week in my newsletter, which makes me want to just die. The idea because I haven't seen the first one. I'm not going to be able to follow it. I'm not going to have any
movies.
Idea what's going on.
It's
Ryan Reynolds
movies.
And Sam Jackson. What? So, anyway, that's what my week has been like. I'm just kind of tired is all.
JVL. Wow. JVL. Go for it.
News story. Up off of P-Town, Provincetown. The very tip of the cape.
Yeah.
Just the tip of the cape.
A gentleman who is a lobster diver was down where there's a lob, not a lobster men. The lobster men's pick up the
I think lobster is more Long Island. It's lobster.
The lobster men pick up the cages, right? But the lobster divers, they go all the way down to the floor of the ocean and just pick them up with their hands. They scuba dive down. They pick up the lobsters
with
their
hands. Hold on 1 second. I thought they were diving down to the cages. Oh, no, wait a minute. No, they're the ones with snorkeling, the scuba gear.
Yeah. These are scuba gear guys who go down and...
Why would you go get a lobster that way? That sounds a million times more difficult than putting traps.
Free range. It's free range, Sonny.
If I was going to bet, I would bet it has something to do with not owning the permits to put down lobster cages.
Oh, do you need? Is that a
that is interesting?
I think
permission
so. I bet
from the state,
probably
the fascist state in which we live.
Yeah, you probably can just put a cage anywhere you want, and other. It's probably that industry is probably very territorial.
Mm. Anyway. Yeah, but also because you got to protect things like overfishing, and there's a whole I could tell you chapter and verse about like permitted fishing stuff because I wrote a piece about this once. Anyway, unimportant. What's important is that this guy is down there and he's picking up lobsters. And all of a sudden, a whale comes along and the whale is feeding and he's got his mouth open to get him some krill. And it turns out that when whales open their mouths to get the krill, the giant orifice kind of like makes it so they can't see where they're going. And it swallows the guy.
That happens to me, by the way. That happens to me when I...
Swallows the guy. The guy, it's totally like Jonah. Just inside the whale. And the whale is something's wrong. This is bad. And so the whale swims up and spits him out. Just throws him out. The guy goes flying. The people on his watch boat are like, what the fuck? So what is amazing about this story in the Providence Cape Times or whatever, or the local paper was I saw.
Cape Cod Times.
Is that this is only the second craziest thing to happen to this dude in his life. The first craziest is that he was on one of these little like chartered flights through like Guatemala or something.
Costa Rica.
And the plane crashed and the pilot was killed. And it was him and, I don't know, five other passengers. And they had to survive in the jungle for like 3 days until the rescue party came. Like full on 6 days and seven nights. Right? The Harrison Ford and Hayes thing. And I just thought, this guy, it's like Final Destination.
Death is coming.
Death is coming for him no matter what he does.
He fooled him twice.
What a crazy ass thing. Sonny, you look like you're not at all. Like,
I know. He's not. The most important thing, by the way, here is that there were witnesses to this. There were eyewitnesses. So if he had come back to shore and went to the crow's nest, remember the crow's nest from A Perfect Storm, right? The crow's nest and said, you won't believe what happened to me. I got swallowed up by a lobster. No. In fact, people saw this happen. Sonny, you look completely unimpressed.
Well, this just goes back to my theory that no one should ever go outdoors because that's where danger is. Fair. That's where planes crash into jungles and whales swallow you up while you're trying to poach some lobsters.
It's also
from the hardworking lobstermen.
It's also very interesting because it was a humpback, right? It was a humpback that swallowed. And those are the ones you see. Like if you go out to the Jersey Shore, you go down to Cape May. If you see any whales, chances are they're humpbacks.
Yeah, you see them all over these coasts. They go back and forth, and evidently the oceanographer or marine biologist profiled in the Cape Cod Times piece was like, yeah, you know what's funny, of course, is that the whale's esophagus is like 6 inches wide.
Thank God, couldn't
swallow the guy. The guy just like trapped in his mouth, and as soon as he started kicking, the whale's like, whoa, this is not right. Don't like it.
That's right, and spit out like as a human would. The other thing is, yes. You remember what he said?
As a human would if they swallowed a man, and the man started kicking the inside of their mouth.
Wait. Ah.
Hold on. Phrasing.
The interesting thing is, the guy said, and the people who had seen it had thought the same thing, and the guy who got swallowed thought he was swallowed by a great white. Could there have been great white sightings in that area?
Yep.
And had that happened, it would have been an entirely different story.
Well, he probably wouldn't have been swallowed by the great white, right? Great white would have like bit his leg and then like thrown him up in the air like a seal.
Depends on the size. There was a guy who was complete with scuba gear who was killed, and he was swallowed entirely by a giant great white, and the guy was still left holding a grenade. Oh, wait a minute. That was Jaws 3D. I got confused. That was starring Simon, what's his name, from Manimal. John Podhoretz is yelling at us because I'm sure he knows the guy's last name. Simon
Manimal.
Manimal. And he had the scuba gear, and he was swallowed up by the great white in Jaws 3D, but he couldn't be swallowed because of the gear. And then when the shark opens its mouth later in the movie, he's still in the mouth holding the grenade. And Dennis Quaid was able to reach in with a rod and pull the pin.
Wow, it's pretty
entirely
nifty.
Entirely believable. Yeah, that's it.
Wait, I don't understand. The guy was still in the mouth?
Yes.
Of the shark?
Yes, the shark could not swallow.
Couldn't get him all the way down.
He couldn't get him all the way down. So you could see
it was halfway down and his arms like up.
His arm is sticking out of the mouth, and then Dennis Quaid was able to pull.
Have never seen Jaws 3D, a terrible dereliction of critical duty.
No, you really should. I saw it in 3D, and the older woman with Dennis Quaid, and I say older, she was probably 30s, was I think Bess Armstrong, but the younger one at the time was Leah Thompson.
Hmm.
Just throwing that out there. JVL, what else?
Yeah, that's all. I just found this story fascinating.
It is an amazing story. And I believe he said that when he noticed it, had the change was when all of a sudden, he got enveloped by the shark, what he realized it had become suddenly a very quiet place. Speaking of which.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh, nice transit. A+.
Over the weekend, A Quiet Place 2 regained regained the top spot at the box office with 11.6 million, followed by In the Heights with 11.4 million, and in third place, Peter Rabbit 2: The Runaway with 10.4 million. Box office thoughts: In the Heights supposed to be the big feel-good blockbuster movie of the summer. Sonny, what's happening here?
Well, it's a musical that has no real stars that is also playing for free on HBO Max. So, I mean, the deck was stacked against it. The deck would have been stacked against it anyway, because this is not the musical is a moribund genre as it is. You know, your outliers like La La Land and
Tell That to the Greatest Showman.
And The Greatest Showman notwithstanding, but you know, those are the exceptions to the rule. I don't know, man. I'm glad that people are still going out to see A Quiet Place. That movie was not quite as front-loaded, maybe, as some of the other stuff that has come out has been. What we're seeing with the HBO movies in particular is you have people who want to go see it in the theater, and they all go the first weekend, and everything has been super front-loaded with those movies. But that, again, that's because it's out on HBO Max right now anyway, so people are kind of inclined to stay home. The problem with In the Heights is that it's nobody knows what it is. It's just a musical. Nobody knows what it
the
is.
Title, the worst title ever.
It's a terrible title.
If you have a musical with no stars, at least your title has to tell people kind of what it's about.
Yeah.
No?
Well, they're in the Heights. I mean, this is...
Which is very New York-centric, because if you were in New York, you'd know what we're talking about.
The problem with the movie is that it's just boring. It's just a boring movie with boring songs and boring dancing. I mean, I could barely, you know, pay attention to it. You guys have fun talking about it with J-Pod next week.
It's going
to
be amazing. Best show ever.
I hate this. It's not for me, because I don't like musicals, because musicals are, without exception, a terrible, terrible genre. So
wait till we see.
Anyway,
yeah, go ahead.
Bad movie that performed appropriately at the box office, which is to say, poorly. I hope nobody goes to see it.
JVL, do you have thoughts on box office?
My thoughts are that we're in a world of trouble. Like, this is Richard Rushfield had a great newsletter out this week saying, how is this all supposed to work when we are down to 5 studios doing 10 movies a year? And of those 10 movies a year, maybe 2 of them for each studio, maybe, with the exception of Disney and Marvel, are theoretically tentpole movies. Like, how are theater owners supposed to have enough mass audience product to remain viable? And this is the other half of why I had said to you guys at the beginning of the pandemic, I said, we may have seen the last movie in a theater that we're ever going to see. And part of it was because the theater owners were in incredibly precarious positions financially. Now, that has been solved by Robinhood, because AMC, despite everything, is now like the fifth most expensive, you know, the fifth biggest market cap in the world because of stonks. I guess.
Stonks. Diamond hands.
Apes. The apes together are strong. And that's why AMC is, you know, America's preeminent meme stock. So that, you know, Reddit solved the AMC capitalization problem.
Reddit saved AMC.
But there's nothing that can save the problem of losing out on product to get people in.
Yeah, it's going to be a real... Right now, the audiences are very heavily tilted towards IP product that they know and recognize and want to see in a big screen, on a big screen theater, right? Like, so if you look at In the Heights, there's an argument to be made that In the Heights did not underperform, that this is a normal performance for a musical, and there's 40% capacity reductions and blah, blah, blah. But if you look at other, there are 3 other movies that HBO has released that Warner Brothers has released that have also been on HBO Max that are that have opened much bigger. Godzilla vs. Kong, Mortal Kombat, and what's the third one? What am I thinking? The Conjuring Part 3. Those movies all did better. They all did better because people know about them. They wanted to go see them in the theaters, even if they could see them at home. And that is why they did okay at the box office. What is the worst movie that HBO has released in theaters in terms of box office performance? At least since the pandemic has been more or less over, is Those Who Wish Me Dead, which is a movie that had no IP attachments. It was star driven, high concept, the sort of thing that died out in the 90s for a reason, because people kind of stopped going to that sort of thing. The real question is, once you start getting a real flow of things that are in theaters that are not available on demand or streaming channels and won't be available on demand or streaming channels for 45 days or 60 days or whatever the window is going to be, then we'll get a better sense of like how the box office is actually going to wind up doing. I mean, like when Fast 9 comes out in a couple weeks here,
F9,
I bet that movie does $75 million opening weekend.
Wow.
I bet it may go higher than that. It could get up to 100 million, honestly. I mean, like, this is the thing about the capacity restrictions, is that they're not actually that huge of a deal. Yes, you miss out on those Friday, you miss out on a big portion of the Friday night, Saturday night audiences. But at the same time, most theaters aren't full 40%.
Yeah, people just shift to other showings.
People shift to other showings. Yeah. So, and here's another little piece of anecdote, and I'll stop talking about this because it's boring to everybody except me. Is that I bought tickets for Black Widow. I bought them ahead of they're on sale now, and I will say that from the seating charts I was looking at on my phone on Fandango as I'm buying the tickets. Those screenings are already pretty much sold out. They are getting to the point of being sold
There's
out.
There's no capacity limit though in theaters in Texas anymore, are there?
Yeah, they're still doing distancing. I don't know if there's like a 30% cap or 40% cap, wow, or 20% cap or whatever, but they're still doing the distancing between seats. So.
When does Black Widow come out?
That comes out July 7th, is when that's going to drop.
And it's 8th, not, is there any deal with it to come out and stream?
It will also be, it's also going to be on Disney Plus's Premier Access tier. So you can pay $30 to watch it at home, or you can pay $20 for an IMAX ticket, one IMAX ticket.
So you're saying if I have Disney Plus, it's not enough?
If you have Disney Plus, you will still have to pay another $30 to get to watch it on at home.
Wow.
Or you can go see it in theaters.
Yeah.
So
the cost of whatever it was. Yeah. As long as I reactivate my stubs.
But just again, my anic data here is that that movie's going to do really well. I bet that movie does a $70 or $80 million opening weekend, and that's a big number even for a Marvel movie, for one of the standalone, individual character movies that's not Iron Man. Those are solid Thor, or
Doctor Strange, Ant-Man
numbers.
Yeah,
But the big question is anything else going to make it? Is anything other than F9, Black Widow, et cetera, going
to
make it?
Disney will have to make 30 Marvel movies a year in order to save.
Well, they've got a huge backload.
Yeah.
They've got a huge backload right now, right? They've got like 10 of these movies coming out in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
There's this, right? And then there's Shang-Chi, and then there's The Eternals, all coming out in like a 5-month stretch. And then there's Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man movie is supposed to come out in December. That's technically Sony, not Marvel, Disney. I mean,
is that still Tom Holland?
I don't know what the revenue split is like.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that should do.
So I don't know. I mean, the question is, will there be enough blockbusters to keep everybody afloat for now? I think the answer is yes. Do audiences come back to the mid-budget movie when they have tons of competition from from streaming channels and the like. I don't know. That has always been the big question coming out of this. I was less skeptical than JVL of whether or not theaters would survive, but I do think there is a real chance that the actual landscape of what you go to see in a theater is radically diminished after this, which is unfortunate.
When you go see in the theater, like you have, Sonny, are there coming attractions and stuff?
Oh, yeah, there's still 25 minutes of previews. Oh. I went to go see Spiral from the Book of Saw last month. And there were 25 minutes of previews.
Of movies?
There,
movies
like,
that
I,
are...
Like, I'm done with my popcorn by the time the previews are over. Because I get the popcorn so I can take
some
the
movies,
mask off.
Despite the pandemic, movies had been being... They're not just... They were being made during the pandemic? Are these movies...
People still...
There were sitting in the can.
Some of them were sitting in the can. There have been some movies made since the pandemic, but not a ton. Most of what's going to be in theaters is stuff that was done and ready to come out in like March or May of last year.
Question.
Yeah.
Were they still able to make new Nuvie?
Was Maria Menounos still?
Hi, I'm Maria Menounos from Nuvie. Today, no. You've seen how NBC Entertainment's new Bionic Woman is coming to theaters, and right?
Thank God! Now that I can reserve my seats in every auditorium beforehand, I get to the movie like when the previews are supposed to start. I do not have to sit through Nuvie or the 20. What is it? The 15? I can't remember. What was that block of entertainment called?
Do you remember before all that, if you got to the movie theater early, it was just trivia?
Slides.
It was a slides. It was
literally
trivia
a
questions.
Slide projector. Yeah. Yes. Up in the booth, the projector booth, somebody
Come
had
to
a...
Family dentistry.
Yeah. Right. And the
pawn shops.
Local. Yeah. That's exactly right. It was like dentistry and pawn shop ads.
And they had you because if you cared about having a good seat, then you had to be there 30 minutes early. Yeah.
And it would subject you to really fuzzy, grainy images. Yeah. Last question on this, Quiet Place 2. So they chose not to come out streaming when they came out, and clearly they're making a lot of money on this. Or I'm very happy for John Krasinski and his wife because they're raking it in. At what point does it go streaming?
I might be wrong on this. I'll effort it while you guys talk.
It's a 45-day window.
But it's a 45-day window, and then it's going to be on Paramount Plus.
Oh, hey, you know what else is on Paramount Plus?
Speaking of Paramount Plus,
this week we're talking about Infinite over on Paramount Plus. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
I'm sorry. JVL. Before you start, Sonny, I'm sorry, guys. This one was my call.
I'm not even going to say anything yet, but this is on me. So much so that you 100%
on me.
You have to preempt Sonny's review with an apology.
Jeez. My bad. Okay, Sonny, go ahead.
Infinite, the best movie I've seen so far this year. That's it. That's the review. No, so
it's like
Infinite,
in Spinal Tap, shark sandwich, shit sandwich. Okay, go ahead.
Infinite. Infinite stars Mark Wahlberg as a man who gets reincarnated and can remember all of his past lives, but everybody thinks he's having a psychotic break, so he's full of crazy pills, and he's got a plate in his head, which stops him from fully remembering everything. Turns out, He's something called an infinite, and there are two kinds of infinites. There's the believers, and then there's the nihilists. And the believers want to use their powers to help humanity, and the nihilists want to use their powers to destroy humanity because they're tired of being reborn into our crappy world. I didn't hate this movie, honestly. It's so like off the wall dumb. And kind of bonkers that it almost has a Fast and Furious vibe to it. And there are things about it that I actively liked. For instance, Chiwetel Ejiofor plays the villain in this, and he is like clearly having a very good time treating the material with no respect at all. You know, he's got this giant bushy beard, he's wearing three-piece suits, and he's just like hamming it up as hard as he can. Mark Wahlberg, his natural look of confusion really aids him well in this film, which I enjoyed and appreciated. Again, the movie is like a big, dumb action movie, and it is big and dumb, and the action is fine. It's perfectly fine. Antoine Fuqua directed this.
It's hard to believe because he's a great director.
I like Antoine Fuqua a lot. I don't think this is his best work, but I do think it kind of falls into the realm. There's a continuity of vision here with this and Shooter and Magnificent Seven remake that he did. The Magnificent Seven remake that he did. The Equalizer movies and Tears of the Sun, which is probably my favorite of his films. Oh, wow. Which is like it is a movie about the use of the morally justified use of violence to save people.
That's with
Bruce
Willis.
And I am always in favor of that because I believe that every problem can be solved with a bullet. There's no problem on this planet that cannot be solved with a well-placed bullet. So on a purely ideological level, I approve of this film. As far as everything else goes, it's very talky. For a movie that involves a brand of like semi-immortal warriors doing battle throughout the ages, and at one point sees Mark Wahlberg ride a motorcycle off a cliff while pulling a samurai sword out and stabbing an airplane with it. For a movie that has something that really kind of visually spectacular, there's just a lot of like, let's talk about what it means to be an infant. Okay, let's talk about that some more. Let's talk about your regression into past lives. Well, let's talk about this. Just talk. Shut up. Just shut up and fight each other with your swords and your guns and your bombs and drive into each other and kill people. It's fine. Just do that instead of talk.
You know, sometimes the worst movies make for the best reviews, Sonny.
All right, I'm done.
Victorino.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, it does get it. There's a technical quadrant score on it, but it does not reflect how I felt about this movie.
Quadrant-wise, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Plot is a B. It's straightforward, but it's not the most exciting plot. Is that Mark Wahlberg narrating? Is he the voiceover?
But it's not. It's not plot. It's understandability.
Understandability. But that's for me.
This is a very easily understood.
For me, that's what we're talking about when I say plot. Duration is an A, even though it felt like an F. But it is like an hour 46, and it was it was short. But man, it on okay. Violence.
It's a loose 106.
Violence action is a B. Okay, so there's a lot of fighting. It's great, but again, this is one of my running things now. I'm so sick and tired of the
CGI. Where are the boobs?
Well, that's the next one. That got D for that. Although, look, it's a PG-13, so I can't, you know, there's only so much you could do. Although, there are a lot of great PG-13 movies out there in certain categories. Back to the violence and the action, though. I'm just so sick and tired of the CGI violence and action. Even the car chase in the beginning, I suspect the one in Mexico City, I suspect that's CGI. Some of it, at least.
There's a lot of CGI.
And then, of course, and it just visually looks bad. Whereas, you know, having recently watched, say, Lethal Weapon or Lethal Weapon 2, those are great car chase scenes. Because, or William Friedkin's To Live and Die in L.A. or The French Connection, which I saw like a month ago. It's great. It's not just because it's gritty, but because it's real and you pick up on that. I think our eyes pick up on that. We realize this thing. And so by the time you reach the end where he gets on that motorcycle with the samurai sword on the wing of the plane, I mean, it was just sort of, it's just too much. It's too much. I thought about how much better it was if this was a Christopher Nolan stunt and if he actually did that. It would be really impressive if he actually did that. So it was CGI overload. And again, I guess because they're picking up, you know, skills throughout previous lives. So they're like, what, like the Matrix? Is that like a kind of a thing where they get better and better? Is that it?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a lot of Matrix.
And honest to goodness, Sonny, you talk about the talking. I dozed off.
I
dozed off in the movie.
And shut up and stab
I was
each other.
Watching with my son, and I actually had to ask him later, did Mark Wahlberg die? I lost track. It was really, I dozed off. JVL, your thoughts.
So I originally was going to say that this is what would happen if the Fate of the Furious went out to a club and roofied Highlander and then took it back to its apartment to just... But I in an attempt to
great sound
for the
effect,
show,
by the way,
I actually watched Highlander, and again for the first time in a very long time, I think it is not as good a movie as we may remember it as being. I'm Ron Burgundy. I mean,
I mean, Highlander is a very, very goofy movie, and like also like weirdly drawn out in places.
Yeah. And it, to the extent that it succeeds purely on the height of the concept. It is incredibly high concept. And the weirdness of Clancy Brown and Christopher Lambert as leads. Because the two of them are really weird cinematic presences. I mean, they're very off-kilter.
And Sean Connery. Also very weird in this movie as the... Spanish Egyptian with the Scottish brogue.
Yeah, but it really, I mean, you know, it is in many ways, you know, this may sound crazy. I think a huge part of the appeal of that movie is just the weird voices that Lambert and Clancy Brown have, because their voices are just out of left field and interesting to listen to. But the point is, it's actually not as good. I don't know about you guys, but when I saw that movie in like 1990, I was like, this is awesome, yeah. You know, and I do not feel that way this time through it. So I didn't want to romanticize how good Highlander is, but Infinite is it's bad. It's a bad movie, and it's a bad movie for all sorts of structural reasons, as if they shot the second draft. Like this is one of those films where you can see the good movie that was there had they, had the director been able to continue the revision process and get to something interesting. And instead, it's just kind of a mess. Yeah. And it's not good.
Yeah, you demanded that we review this because you saw the trailer and you were like, this looks awesome.
Yeah, I said, this looks like James Bond meets The Matrix meets Highlander. Right. I mean,
and you have two great leads, that, you know, Chiwetel Ejiofor and Mark Wahlberg. And then you have Antoine Fuqua directing and, you know, and I don't know, it kind of felt like it had a very cool vibe to it. And then you get into it and you're like, man, when is this thing going to pick up? Or also you just didn't feel sort of any connection with any of the characters, especially because they inhabit different bodies, well, I guess.
I mean, a big problem in the movie really starts in with the second act. The first act isn't bad, honestly. But once we move to the stakes, which in the second act, which are revealed as that Bathurst, Chiwetel Ejiofor's character's name is, which is a pretty cool name, actually, Bathurst, that his, you know, what he wants is to eliminate all life. And that just, like, doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Right.
I think it fails completely. No,
I
disagree with this because I think this is one of the rare occasions where it actually makes sense that somebody would want to end all life on Earth because he is tired of living.
It's very
he cannot end his own existence.
I know,
that's
a very Tenet like motivation.
Well, except
the world.
Except that he has the means to achieve this without the egg. Right. I mean, he has his super special gun with the special bullets that he could just shoot himself with. Right. That would stop him from living.
I guess that's true.
He doesn't want anyone else to live either, though.
There are all sorts of other things that he could do. Like, for instance, since you would assume that the Infinites, since they are able to play the long game financially, could control like half of the world's money supply. he could start a global nuclear holocaust, right? I mean, this is, you know, there are ways to end all of life on Earth that don't necessarily involve
the cube,
some
the
magical
egg.
Piece of technology. And also, the movie lies to us by telling us in the beginning that these are nihilists who don't believe in anything, when Bathurst is the only person who seems to really believe in God. Like, we get this weird scene where he is
he's looking for the face of God with
a shroud of Turin like over his face, and they're pouring gasoline into his mouth while he's asking God to give him a vision. And then at the end, as we like move into the climactic part of the third act, he has this weird offhand moment where he's setting up the bomb and he says to his little henchwoman, "Do you think he'll let us do it?" And points like up to the sky, meaning, "Do you think God will actually allow us to end all life?"
Which is a very strange
moment where it's like, oh, this guy's a real believer. Like he's not. It's not that he doesn't believe in God. He's just angry at God. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of interesting, except that the movie and the voiceover stuff sets it up all wrong.
I read that as him doubting the existence of God, him trying to be proven wrong in a way.
No, he's totally, he is team God. There are interesting motivations for him. There are all sorts of interesting things that Bathurst could have wanted to do in the world as a bad guy. But none of this stuff makes any sense. And so the stakes wind up being weird and not believable. And because they're not believable and they're weird, not really interesting.
Wow, I think I slept through that part.
Every minute that Bathurst is off screen, my attention began to wander.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
no, he's the best part. EG4 is the best part of this movie. He's by a fairly wide margin.
He's the best part of every movie. I will just bang my drum on this again. He should be the next James Bond. Daniel Craig is. No, he's 40. He's like 43 years old. He's not too old.
He's older than that.
No, he's not. I just looked it up.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's still too old.
He's my age. He'd be fantastic. Gosh, it'd be so good as James Bond.
The problem is James Bonds are always, they end up always getting an actor who is just on the very edge of being too old, and then they could do a couple movies and then they're just old, you know? And I remember the same thing. They were talking about Idris Elba. Idris Elba is, you know, he's too old, but you can't have somebody who's too young either, because that would be like Alex Rider or some of those movies where instant teen secret agent, you know, that's just not believable because you
Cody
have to.
Cody Banks.
Yes, that's right. What was the guy from Malcolm in the Middle? Right, Cody Banks. You have to sort of earn your way into 007 British Secret Service status. I don't know. In terms of the messaging and the idea of reincarnation, it's funny. I still maintain that the best reference to reincarnation is in Pineapple Express. Do you remember this? And Danny McBride plays this sort of, he was sort of the Zen drug dealer. And Seth Rogen is trying to convince him to do the right thing. And in the process, he says, you know, you have to do the right thing, because if you don't, you may come back in the next life as something terrible, like an anal bead. You don't want to be that, do you? And Danny McBride goes, oh, kind of depends on who owns it. Sorry.
This is, I mean, if I can just... So
good digression.
It's a great line.
I scribbled some notes here. So when I say it's just not well constructed... to start with, the introductory voiceover, totally unnecessary.
And that was him, right? That's Mark Wahlberg.
That's Mark Wahlberg. And he's just spelling out for us things that the movie's going to show us in short order.
That the movie will literally just say later.
Yeah.
Like, the exact speech that he gives is repeated by the woman,
right,
20 minutes later.
I mean, it's helpful for me, but at the same time, I didn't find it interesting. I was like, oh, I see where we're going.
There's a drone sequence when the good infinite girl goes to Bathurst Estate, which is, I mean, it's not long. It's like 2.5 minutes, but it's totally unnecessary, right? It's like just there so that Bathurst can like put on his special gloves and control drones like he's Tom Hanks in
Minority
Report or something.
Tom Cruise, yeah.
It's meaningless. And then this weird coda to the movie with, again, Mark Wahlberg giving us about, you know, what are the real lessons? What have you all learned here? Which are all totally, totally disconnected from the plot of the movie, right? They're all about, you know, the real reincarnation is just the friends you make along the way. You could do anything. We just got to teach each other and connect. It's like, what is this, fucking E.M. Forrester or something? It's a
You know what was also very weird about the ending of this movie is that, all right, you've got this movie that should be a franchise for you, right? You've got this movie that should be a Paramount franchise. Like, this is the first movie in the Infinite series. It could go on forever, in theory.
Infinite.
And then how does it end? It ends with Mark Wahlberg dying and some no-name person being reborn as him. Like, how, you can't have a franchise if you don't have a franchise actor in it. Like, is Jason Mustakas supposed to be the character who's in all of these movies?
Oh, right.
I don't think so. He was great in this. I love him. He's fantastic.
He plays the same character every time.
Sure, but some people can get away with that, like Danny McBride. Yeah. Yeah. The just mentioned Danny McBride. Yeah, I mean, like Mustakas, he's kind of goofy and like wide eyed and crazy, but like that works for him, and he works in this movie. But yeah, that is the structural thing I found most weird and like kind of baffling about it is like if you have this thing that you clearly want to be a big franchise with a star and, you know, big action sequences and everything, and then you kill the star, and it's not like you can bring him back because he's been reincarnated as this little Asian
boy. And
we're
now in the future.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I put together some questions. Some questions that occurred to me, if we could go through this.
Please.
Sure.
Yeah. So we're told that Bathurst can't possibly make another egg, and that the egg is lost. Why are the believers trying to find it? Right? Why not just let it stay lost?
Because they don't want Bathurst to find it.
Because then there won't... But he can't find it unless... Like, he's out of ammo. He's got nothing.
Well, he's...
And
no,
he says,
well,
in fact...
He's
like,
trying to... He's trying to find the reincarnated guy, whatever his name was, the Mark Wahlberg.
Right. To make him tell him where it is.
To make him tell him where it is, right.
And
right.
So what the believers then are like, yeah, we got Mark Wahlberg, so we gotta find it first. No, you don't.
Well, they got to find it first, because otherwise, if Edgy4 gets him, he'll torture him into giving up the
information, he'll put him in the trance, and then he'll realize, look inside.
He'll pour the gasoline on him.
So the believers have been doing this for a couple thousand years, and they haven't figured out some way to commit suicide quickly so that you can't be either tortured or bullet boxed. Like, they don't automatically install cyanide in the tooth or something. No.
Well, I thought about that myself. I think the problem here is that it's not like they just die and then they show up again. It's like a, 13-15 year process, right?
At
least. They get reborn and then they're, they got to grow up and then they have to realize who they are.
The Viking dude literally says to Mark Wahlberg, look, if you see one of those bad, special guns, then you should probably just kill yourself the old fashioned way. You know, so it's clearly something they've thought about. There's all sorts of weird stuff. When they're in the artisan's lair and Bathurst comes in, and then the Chinese lady, who clearly was at some point a minor character or a secondary character in one of the scripts, and has been basically written all the way out so that she has almost no lines, in fact.
Yeah, she's a trainer, right?
Right. She gets killed, and then they're all sad. And it's like, well, why are you sad? Because everybody's getting reincarnated, right? And the Viking dude decides to stay and fight.
Pain in the ass to find her.
And why is he staying to fight now, right? Like, it's just not clear. Because there is, again, all of these are just basic blocking and tackling of making a movie.
Would this have been different had there not been a pandemic, do you think? Is this just another casualty, like bad movie making because of this thing?
I think this is just one of those movies.
Like, we've seen a lot of bad movies.
Comes out. You know, I thought a lot about Suspect Zero. Do you guys remember Suspect Zero? Suspect Zero was at one point in time was the hottest script in Hollywood, and it got bought up and turned into a movie and then went into development hell for like 8 years, and then finally a filmed version of it got pushed out. I forget who the director was, but it had like Aaron Eckhart and Ben Kingsley in it, and the finished product bore almost no relationship to the spec script and was just an incompetently made movie. And the answer to these, you know, how does something like that happen with real talent attached to it, with interesting source material and interesting ideas? And the answer is that there are like bureaucratic things that happen in the making of a movie, which sometimes are tied up with the artistic nature of the endeavor and sometimes are just tied up with the actual bureaucracy involved, right? Because it involves hundreds of people. You know, somebody in accounting, somebody in production, you have people in marketing who are waging, you know, years-long fights against people in the C-suite, right? And, you know, and this stuff happens. And a lot of times, movies that should be better just come out like this. And it's like you've got these forces acting on the yeah. artistic process.
It's sometimes miraculous when it doesn't, when it actually
yeah.
works out.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, a lot of me looks at a movie like this, which I think is, again, a very bad movie. And the lesson I take from it is that it's amazing that any good movie comes out of the big corporate studio system. Like, yeah, it's yeah. amazing that of these artistic endeavors turns out okay.
It's like reading about the making of The Godfather, you know, yeah. and so many things could have gone wrong. In particular, that the studio did not want Marlon Brando. They wanted Ernest Borgnine. Or Danny
oh
Thomas.
Oh my God, I forgot you know? About that.
Like, that would have been something. Because the insurance, it cost so much money for Marlon Brando because he was so unpredictable, but he really kept it together. And, you know, everybody was against him. Everybody was against Al Pacino. I mean, it's, you know, these things. Yeah. You're right, it's miraculous.
Did you guys play around with Paramount Plus at all? Hey, so you've been a subscriber, right, JVL?
Yeah, I just subscribed right off the bat for, I forget why, but I had a reason that I needed to subscribe to it. And
Picard.
No, I think it might have been to watch like a football game. I want to watch the Eagles lose to somebody. And, you know, it's wrapped up with CBS All Access, and that's where you yeah. will get NFC games, maybe. Maybe that's why I have a subscription. But this strikes me as like the most Paramount Plus. It's a perfect movie for Paramount Plus, because Paramount Plus is a third-tier streaming service which has been assembled for no reason other than you have a corporation which has been basically caught up in the mental decline of an old person, right? This is, you know, yeah. all of Paramount has been held hostage by the fact that Sumner Redstone held onto this thing until he was a drooling nobody. And then he died and it went into a huge legal fight with his daughter, widow and,
yeah.
Widow or daughter?
You're right. It was maybe it was a widow. Yeah.
But the point is, the whole corporation was just like frozen and couldn't do anything because there was this thing happening on top of it. And then they were like, "Yeah, everybody, so the future is streaming. Paramount Plus." You know, they just pushed this thing out. It has no reason to exist. It yeah. has nothing to draw people to it. It is still boring.
Unless you're very into Star Trek.
I was going to say, strictly Paramount, exactly right. Paramount Productions. That's it, right? Nothing. I mean, think about HBO Max.
It's interesting. I poked around a little bit in Paramount Plus, and I wouldn't say that it's. I'll put it this way: I'm probably going to cancel my subscription when I get to the end of my 30 free days. But I will say that, the library of movies is pretty good. They have a pretty wide range of TV shows, and I'm interested. By the fact, I'm interested about the integration of CBS into the streaming platform. So you can watch live CBS on it from whatever your local broadcast
Correct.
Affiliate is, which is interesting. And it's an interesting kind of innovation that I think, you know, none of these other streamers really have. HBO Max, there's no Fox streamer, there's no NBC stream. I guess there's
no. That's
Peacock.
Not true. So Hulu lets you do this. YouTube TV lets you do this.
Yeah, yeah, but that's like you essentially are buying a cable package right. with them.
Sling,
at that point.
Sling lets you do this, and Paramount Plus is not cheap.
Yeah, it's $10 a month.
It's $10 a month, which is more
for
than,
the ad free version.
I think Disney gives you for $13 a month. It's Disney plus ESPN plus Hulu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just, as a value proposition, it doesn't work.
And there's nothing you have to go there. Unless you're a big Star Trek fan, there's just nothing.
Which
Star
Trek are we talking
like
about, Sonny?
Well, they have
the whole thing. TNG.
They have a new series, DSN. Star Trek Discovery, but then they also have like a Picard series that is the second season of which is coming out next year. It's not even coming out like. So maybe I'll pick it up again when Picard season 2 drops, but.
Yeah, so this is, again, you know, this is a movie which has been done with thoughtless because somebody had a, we should have a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's sort of just pushed out without thinking it through or doing it. And that is what Paramount Plus is as a streaming. My question is whether Paramount Plus is gobbled up by somebody else or if it just dies. Because to be gobbled up, it would have to be attractive. And my guess is that the Paramount library will be attractive, but nothing about Paramount Plus will be attractive. And so if
is Yellowstone on Paramount Plus? Is that?
I think that's Discovery, no?
Maybe.
I don't know. But the point is, somebody at some point will, you know, either Paramount will abandon Paramount Plus and switch to the Sony strategy where they become an arms dealer, just supplying content for all the streaming services, or it will fail and be a distressed property and somebody will buy the library. Mm. And that somebody would be, I assume, Disney. Although, because Warner's, you know, is now in a new world where they are cut out of the telephone people and don't really know what they're doing. And now they are, the idea that Discovery, the hacks who make bullshit reality television, are running HBO Max, which is sneakily maybe the best or second best, certainly the second best streaming
it's
service,
great.
If not the best.
A lot of quality.
Way better than Netflix.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah.
It just, ugh. It's all bad. It's all very bad. That's all I've got.
Okay. Corrections, shout-outs, anything going on? All right, then.
Shout-out to Rogue Left Shark, who, as we were about to hop on, asked a question on the Twitters, which is why she asked this, I don't know, but she asked, guys, when you go to the bathroom and you gotta pee, do you do it standing up or sitting down? I don't know why somebody would ask that on Twitter, but what she has opened herself up to, I think she'll never be able to unsee. And so thoughts and prayers to Shark.
Wow.
We love you, Shark.
All right. I'm very confused here. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sunny Bunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
You know, the biggest disappointment about Paramount Plus was, again, I was like kind of just flipping through it to see what they had. And they have a decent film library, right? They've got all the Indiana Jones movies.
Yeah,
they've got
Mission Impossible,
half the Mission,
right?
Impossible, Mission Impossible movies.
Is
they've got
there's
all
only
the
one
Star
good
Trek
Indiana
movies.
Jones movie.
Wrong, incorrect. There's three good Indiana Jones.
Yes,
movies.
False. And yes, number one, The Crystal Skull. Oh, sorry.
There are two perfect movies that are Indiana Jones movies: Raiders of the Lost Ark and Last Crusade. But there's Temple of Doom is also good and interesting and weird and dark, yeah. And I like it. But what I wanted to mention was it. So it has The Abyss, which famously has never been released on Blu-ray or outside of there's like a terrible, crappy DVD and VHS floating around somewhere. But it has never been released on high def. So it has The Abyss. So I like turned on The Abyss. I just like wanted to see what the deal was, and it has The Abyss.
Is it a pan and scan?
It has The Abyss in 4x3.
4x3 pan and scan?
Standard definition. And I was just like, why even bother? Like, James Cameron
should...
do
this. James Cameron
should,
could...
James Cameron should firebomb Paramount Studios on general principle. But the problem here is James Cameron. James Cameron is the problem. James Cameron won't, like, stop making his Avatar movies for 30 seconds to look at a print of The Abyss and approve it and say, okay, this can be released on 4K UHD. Go. You know?
The Abyss, starring your friend Michael Biehn.
Michael Biehn!
Can I just also say really quickly, and then I want to turn to Jonathan here. We were thinking about movies in the future besides In the Heights, things that we want to talk about. You know what I want to watch? I want to watch Kid 90. That's what I want to watch. Kid 90.
I don't know what that is.
I have no idea what that is.
I have no idea what softcore porn you're talking about right now.
Kid 90 is Sully Moon Frye's home movies from her time in Hollywood as a kid with all the famous then Hollywood stars, Brian Austin Green, Mario Lopez, and you name it, the folks from 90210. It is less than 2 hours.
That's not a thing.
And
we're
I think
watching.
There's probably.
I wish I had a mute button think right now.
There is
so
some good stuff in those home movies.
These videotapes that were stolen from her house and are being released by Vivid Entertainment?
She took video of everything. And so, man, I'm just thinking it's got to be a lot of good stuff in there. JVL.
I'm sure it's fine.
You said
you
want to
do
Peloton.
This is going to sound weird.
Weirder than what we just heard.
What, Kid 90? That's a serious movie. I see commercials for it all the time.
So it is. I did this Peloton workout today, and it is important to say that I have started a training program where you are following. You know, they pick the classes for you. I did not pick this, and I logged in. This class is taught by a lady who very high energy. Like her a lot. But she had this thing where throughout the entire class, she was constantly basically tucking her boobs back into her sports bra like that. And this was not Jess King. And I mean, she was touching herself like she was on Cinemax or something.
Okay, was it like a wardrobe malfunction situation? Or do you think she's like... Just
do you think that's her thing? That's her
shtick. Thing?
So I was curious about exactly that question, and so I went to the Google machine, and I learned some things about her. First of all, I learned that there's an entire universe of like Peloton After Dark stuff where Peloton instructors disappeared from the platform. So one of the things Peloton does is they keep a library of every single class that's ever gone. But, you know, like sometimes you'll wake up one day and you will discover that Oliver Lee, a longtime Peloton instructor, not only is he gone, you know, you just wake up on Monday and Oliver Lee, your favorite instructor, is no longer there. But every class he ever taught is gone.
It's been erased, deleted.
Erased because.
Because why?
Possibly he was sending dick pics to Peloton members. I don't know. I can't say. This is just what they say on Reddit. Nobody knows. They just parted ways.
Well, I mean, but he's probably driving a lot of traffic with that. You know, I mean, he's getting a lot of subscribers.
I don't know. Another instructor, Jennifer Jacobs, left Peloton because evidently she fat shamed somebody in the middle of a ride.
Isn't that the whole point?
Peloton? Aren't they just berating you the entire time?
I don't know. But the point is that I became very interested in all of these Peloton instructors, in part because, as I said a couple weeks ago, they are the new American gladiators, the new, you know, they are our avatars that we love, like Nitro and Sub-Zero and all that from The Running Man. Anyway, this gal who I like a lot, and I thought she was an excellent instructor. Her name is Olivia. She actually came from Wall Street, and she worked in derivatives in Wall Street. And she says in one of her bios that actually what she liked to do, because she was always very into fitness, is that she would take clients out. Instead of taking clients out to lunch, she would take them to work out together. And as I thought of watching her just basically feeling herself up throughout this ride, and then I thought, okay, so you're a hedge fund bro, and she says, hey, let's go to do a workout together at Mint or something. I'm sure it's fine.